Loading in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It's the cure for the common restaurant. Expert interviews, tools, and tips to get you the restaurant you know it can be. Now, here is your host, Donald Burns, the Restaurant Coach.
And welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. Hey, is it just me? Are you seeing the restaurant world changing right before your eyes? I mean, it's getting crazy out there right now. So what can you do to help stabilize some of the insanity going around you? You know, it's hard to control sales, but one thing you can control is your profitability. Since COVID hit, I have had all of my private coaching clients and members of my mastermind group shift their focus on increasing profits. How do you ask? It's not as hard as you think. I actually outlined the steps that you need to take in an ebook called 9 Ways to Make More Money in 90 Days. I know that's a bold statement, but I have proven that it works in any size restaurant. In fact, I beta tested this system out with over 100 independent restaurants in 7 different countries, and everyone who followed the system saw an increase in their profits. You just head over to www.restaurantkpimastery.com to grab a copy of your ebook for free to get started. Now, turning one-time guests into repeat guests is always a goal for any restaurant. The real secret is to make that returning guest a raving fan. When you have a raving fan, they don't just come down when you have a coupon or a discount. They drive past all the other restaurants in your market to visit you. Loyal guests are your salvation when times get tough. People still eat out, even when there's tough times like we're going through right now. Now, it might be dine-in, takeout, or delivery, but when someone spends their money with you, you must be capturing their data so you can start a relationship with them. That is the first step to creating raving fans. Now, my guest today is a master at helping restaurants convert regular guests into raving fans. Rev Ciancio is a real ordained minister that followed his true calling by helping restaurants attract more guests. So let's jump into the interview. Hey, welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. Today, I am honored to have Rev Ciancio. Did I butcher it again?
No, you'll be fine.
All right.
That's why I go by Rev. So much easier.
Just go by Rev, yeah. So, you know, I meant to ask you, I mean, I know, like, when I send you an email, it says David. How'd you get the nickname Rev?
My birth name is David Ciancio. My father's first name, different last name, long story. Anyway, in 1997, I learned how easy it was to get ordained. I'm going to use hashtags here, quotations like that, on the internet. Wow. And I thought it would be really, really funny if I was a reverend. And when I learned how easy it was to become one, I did it. So in January 22nd of 1997, I was ordained as the Reverend David J. Ciancio. I used to call myself the potentate of heavy metal, the Maharaja of heavy metal. But originally, I was a reverend of heavy metal. And then it just like I started signing my emails and my checks and everything, you know, Rev Dave Ciancio. And people didn't realize it was a title. They thought it was my first name. People just started calling me Rev, and I went with it. So,
all right.
But I want to be very explicit. I did not do it for religious purposes.
You know, I'm thinking right now, you know, if I ever get married again, I might have you do it.
I have done 16 weddings. I do have that power. Yes.
That's awesome. So, you know, for the people listening to the show and the first time they've kind of been introduced to you, tell us a little bit about you, where you're stationed at, you know, where you're living at, you know, and how you got kind of into this crazy business.
Sure. So I'm two things. I'm a serial agency owner, and I'm also a failed restaurant operator. So I was in the music business for the first part of my career for like 12 years. I did, I managed rock and roll bands, like world touring rock and roll bands, you know, recorded albums with Dave Grohl. Like I had that life.
Wow.
You know, airplanes, you know, VIP, backstage. I lived that life. But one day I woke up and I was like, God, I hate musicians. Like, I hate musicians. No offense to musicians, but I hate you. And I say that jokingly because I was getting so many, like, I would call my bands on the road and be like, how was the show last night? What I want to hear, okay, is how many tickets we sold, Mm-hmm. What were merchandise sales? Was there anything crazy that went down? What was the crowd's reaction? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I want business signals because I'm not there, because I'm running your business somewhere else. Okay. What I would get more often than not was, we really don't like the color of red that the printer is using on the back of our t-shirts. And I'm like, you pay me 20% commission and that's how you want to spend your time. And honestly, I got fed up with those kinds of conversations. And I was like, I'm going to go buy a bar because you can't download a cheeseburger. And then what I've learned, and I've segued my career, and I'm sort of taking some stabs there. I actually love that part of my career. And I love musicians and I love music, but it was very frustrating. Is that chefs and restaurant owners are actually very similar to touring rock musicians.
Exactly, right?
they prioritize the art, which is incredibly important, mm-hmm. And they deprioritize the business. And what I learned in that business as it relates to what I do now is that the really, really successful or wealthy artists and musicians were one that learned that the business was as important as the art, right? Mm-hmm. And so my career since then, I've been basically in the hospitality business as an operator. I worked for a ground beef manufacturer for a while. And I've worked most recently selling marketing hospitality tech to restaurant owners. Okay. I was recently the head of marketing for Single Platform. I don't know if you or your audience know who that is. They're a technology company that helps restaurants manage their menus all over the internet. Google, Facebook, Yelp, Bing, Yahoo, etc. Very powerful. We had 40,000 customers. We were doing millions of dollars of business. It was very exciting. They got purchased by TripAdvisor, which was a great move for both those companies. And with all acquisitions, there's a reckoning. I was in the first reckoning. They literally got rid of almost the entire senior management, head of tech, head of IT, head of finance, head of marketing. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go back to being a consultant, and I'm going to go back to helping restaurants and tech companies. So I now run a consulting company where I basically have two clients. Part of my client base is hospitality tech companies that help restaurateurs to be more successful. I help them generate leads and acquire customers. And another part of my business is helping restaurant operators with their awareness, acquisition, and retention marketing, as well as their tech stack. So that's who I am.
Awesome. Awesome. And you are you are a food connoisseur. Your Instagram page, I mean, when I go there, man, I feel my arteries clogging up when I look at your Instagram. I mean, some of those sandwiches, those burgers and stuff like that. There's that stuffed grilled cheese one. It's like, oh my God, that's like a heart attack calling me.
I think the grilled cheese you're talking about is from Melt Bar and Grill.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
In Ohio. One of them, it has like, it's a, it's called a potato bacon bomb. So it's a grilled cheese with basically like potato skins inside of it. So. Wow. There's that side of my life too. I run a couple of food Instagram accounts. I've about 650,000 followers total. So I also have some insights in a B2C scenario. So there's a lot of insights I can offer a restaurant operator there.
Yeah, yeah. So if you want to, connect with Rev, I mean, his Instagram is, it's the bomb. I like following people like Rev because, I use your Instagram as a great example for a lot of my clients. Because I say, if you want to see what, really good, pictures is, good content, good engagement, and proper use of hashtags, that's the one to, follow Rev. He's the guy, you got it down. So
that's funny because I appreciate that. Thank you. I look at your account and I look at like Doug's account and I look at Bruce from Smart Pizza marketing account. I'm like, I could be better at marketing myself. Like,
we all follow each other and we're all friends because I think we all, we all respect each other and we all, I love what you're doing. I think your stuff's great. You always have such animated pictures too. really good stuff. So let's jump into some questions. COVID-19 really has shaken the industry down to its total core. What is your view of the industry right now as you see it?
So let's remove COVID-19 for a second.
Okay.
I think the restaurant business was heading for shrinkage anyway.
It was. Okay.
If you go look at the stats, and I can't quote them from the top of my head, but there were more restaurants than mouths that had the money to afford their business.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think shrinkage was coming regardless. And where it was coming from, I can't predict that or tell you, but I think we were kind of headed for a bit of a crash no matter what.
Right. Okay.
And if you look at industries, if you look at like home services or you know, hotel hospitality or auto mechanics versus the restaurant business. In a pre-COVID world, the restaurant business was pretty behind when it came to tech and marketing, right? The hotel business 10, 20 years ago was like, we're putting it all in, online. We're getting Expedias and you're going to book online and you're going to order room service from your phone. And like, we're all in. And the restaurant business was like, well, I opened my doors and my pizza's great. I don't need anything else. Right.
Yeah.
So I think this like sort of tech reckoning was coming anyway. Okay. And the need for a digital ordering suite and Facebook advertising and communication tools for your customers was literally, it was on the doorstep, and restaurants that were growing were using it, and restaurants that were not growing were not, okay? Insert COVID. And I think all it did to the business was fast forward, okay? It literally, almost like a time machine. And it's like Bill and Ted showed up and said, something is afoot at the Circle K, and we're going to get to the end of the story immediately, right? And so what do I think that COVID is basically put a magnifying glass on what you need to do to be successful. And the things that you need to do to be successful as a restaurant aren't any different than they were in a pre-COVID world. They might have changed a little, but from a mindset perspective and from a technology need perspective, all they've done is put a magnifying glass on it.
Exactly. You know, I had someone actually, I wrote an article late last year around December about how to survive the upcoming restaurant apocalypse. I wrote this last year. I had people actually write me letters saying you caused this because you kind of you foreseen this, and you like, I didn't foresee COVID. Give me a break. You know, no one can see this coming. I knew, just like you, the market was oversaturated. It had, the bubble was going to burst. It just, it, like you said, COVID just kind of like brought it to the front and center real fast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, when people are choosing where to eat a meal, they're looking for primarily two things, right? Either convenience, I'm busy, I don't want to cook right now, I got nine kids in a, at a soccer game, right? So where are you, how fast are you, blah, 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 right? So that's one. The and the other is an experience. I want to get out of my house and leave my body for an hour and have you pour my glass of wine, okay? So when you take those two things and you add COVID to them, well, you really, convenience is kind of is the king there, because you can't, there's no in-store, there's no experience. And most restaurateurs have not figured out how to deliver the experience, right? I talk about how do you put in-store in bag, right? How do you deliver that experience when all they get is a seamless bag, right? They haven't figured that out. So convenience is now actually the king, right? How fast can I get this? What, you know, can I get a family meal? When can the pizza be here? Feed my family of four. You know, I'm a single parent doing school and work. Like, all it did was put a necessity on those things.
Yeah, I'm a single parent doing school, my own school. I'm doing work and I'm homeschooling my kids.
Yeah, so I don't have time. I don't have time to cook boiled noodles. You know,
yeah, I don't have time now. Instant ramen is too slow. Basically, yeah. You know, but being able to pivot and change is really paramount right now. What are some ways you've been recommending to your clients that they kind of shift their business models?
So, you know, I've been telling my clients, and really anybody that'll listen, thank God, is align your business to the customer journey, right? And the needs of your community. Because if you're not supplying them with what they need or what they want, you don't have a business, right? You have a creative outlet that's going to bankrupt you. So, so, you know, when you think about how to pivot or what to do, how can you serve the needs of your local community and your local customers better? I think that really does come down to convenience, right? Does price really matter? I mean, I don't care. If I want Ferrazzoli's pizza, which great pizza, I will just order Ferrazzoli's because that's what I want. And I will use the most convenient way to get it that is possible available, right? And if Ferrazzoli's, and I'm not picking on them, I love them. It's actually my favorite local pizza place. They actually removed a lot of third-party delivery. If I want them, I have to go to their website and order it. Good for them. Right. That's the type of pivoting you do. Right. Make it convenient, make it easy, and give the people what they want.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the days of people thinking that they know best, you know, I always have that ownership. I know what my guests want.
I would argue differently. I would say this. Technology. I don't know why this industry has such xenophobic people in it. Like
they hate tech.
It's like, typical scenario. Okay. I'm a restaurant operator. Somebody has called me and said, listen, here's this thing where you send a delivery to your customer and 30 minutes later you text message them and ask them how it was. Mm-hmm. And if they respond, it was great. You say, cool, you want to leave me a reply on Google? And if they say it was bad, you have a private conversation about making it better. Okay. That sounds like a great piece of technology to me. Because mm-hmm. if the customer was in the store and they said, I had a problem, my meal was cold, the server was rude, the bathroom was dirty, what would you do? You would take care of it on the spot, right? So now you have communication that allows you to do that at scale on delivery. Well, that's putting the experience in the restaurant, okay? Here's my scenario. You bring that to a restaurant operator, like, nah, I don't want to do that. Doesn't make sense. And on the next full phone call, they're going to haggle over the 5 cents that per pound difference that their meat purveyor is asking to put on their steaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, focus on where you can make a difference, not focus. I would say the biggest problem with restaurant owners is that they're focused on the wrong things.
Yeah. Somebody said to me today, another consultant I'm friendly with, he's like, yeah, my customers aren't buying this service. Like, they're too slow. And I was like, they're not too slow. You haven't given them a compelling reason why they need this. Because I'm sure if their toilet broke today, they have a compelling reason to fix that thing, right? Yeah. And so you're like, I know that. Yeah, we're beating up a little bit on restaurant owners here, but we're trying to get them to think differently, right?
Hey, you have to.
The idea here is like, look, there are really successful restaurant models out there, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Just look at what they did and borrow.
Exactly. Yeah, it's called, I study NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, and they call it modeling. You find someone getting the results you want, and you find out what they did, you reverse engineer it, and then you get the same results. Pretty. I would say, restaurant success is not rocket science. It's people science.
I journal. I don't know if you, I think you do that.
Yeah, I'd love to journal.
In one of my journals, I have a picture of the white convertible Mustang that is not yet in my driveway, but one day will be, right? And whenever I see people driving a Mustang convertible, I'm like, see, I can do it.
Yep,
exactly. I don't act like I'm poor. I'm just spending money on other things right now. But the point is, like, if someone else has done it, you can do it.
You can do it. That's the truth. That's so true. You know, leadership right now is real critical for, especially this time in restaurants. What do you think is the number one trait that a leader needs today?
I think they need trust.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
You have to trust. First of all, you got to trust yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And part of that is trusting yourself to know what to do and how to treat people. And then you have to trust your people to do the right thing. But mm-hmm. that comes with a caveat, right? And you'll go on for days about this. Mm-hmm. Is you have to teach them the right thing first,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you can trust them. If you've taught them badly, if you haven't, I think this is a Donaldism, treat them till they can't fail, or train them till they can't fail, right? If you've trained them till they can't fail, then you can trust them.
Yeah, I think it's up on my wall behind me. It says, you know, don't train them till they get it right. Train them till they can't get it wrong.
We
train them like one or two times. You got it? Yeah, I got it. And we leave them. And then we come back. Hey, what happened? Everyone says, I got it. Yeah, you don't got it.
Yeah. I remember when I told you I'm a failed operator. We had a two bar concept. There's a bar upstairs and a bar downstairs. Mm-hmm. And we ran downstairs and another group ran upstairs. And the guys upstairs were just absentee owners, and they installed a general manager that, like, they kind of half trained. And then one day when it was too late, they were looking at the books, and this guy had spent like $17,000 in cheap vodka. And he was hiding it around the bar.
Wow.
He basically was not doing inventory.
Wow.
Every week was just like, yeah, we need 3 cases of this like crappy vodka. And we had so much vodka that it almost looked like we were some prohibition style, like we're waiting for a car to show up so we can like offload these bottles. And we owed so much money to a distributor that like we actually couldn't come out from under it because they didn't train him, but they trusted him, right? So trust without training isn't actually trust. That's stupidity. But I think trust is relying on your ability to train.
Yeah, I would say trust without training is blind faith. You know? And that doesn't work out sometimes too well, especially for restaurants.
No, but if you trust yourself to train them the right way, then you can trust them to run the business.
Now, you know, you and I are big, you know, big proponents of good, great food. You know, we love to eat. And I'm also a big believer in self-care. Do you believe in self-care? And not necessarily physical, but I mean, like, you journal.
Yes.
Would you say that's a form of self-care?
I exercise this daily. I exercise the rest of this not so frequently.
Well, so what do you do for your mental conditioning? Give me some things that you do for mental conditioning.
I love that you asked me this question. So I get out of bed. The first thing I do is I don't get out of bed until I've generated a state of gratefulness. Like, ooh. I literally, sometimes it takes 2 minutes, sometimes it takes 20, but I will not get out of bed until I feel grateful about my life, my family, my opportunity, my abundance. Like, that's number one. Then I have a couple of tasks that I do. I take a shower or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then the first thing I do after I've like cleaned and prepared, shaved, you know, comb the hair, whatever. I sit down in front of my computer or on an iPhone and I have a daily practice. So I have a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they're all different, where I read myself a high level thinking note about a frame of mind I want to be in.
Wow. Very cool.
When I'm done with that, then I read what I call my to be list. I don't have a to-do list. I have a list of what I want to be that day. And it starts with an affirmation that I've written to myself and I recraft every morning. It takes me 5 minutes to read it. Here's what I want to be. Here's what I want to accomplish. Here's the person I am. Here's what I believe. Mm-hmm. I then take 2 minutes to write out not a to-do list, but I look mm-hmm. at my day and I go, how do I want this thing to turn out? Mm-hmm. What is the result of it? And I write those down.
Yeah.
And I write those down. Then I go and do my day. Then at the end of my day, like end of my work day, not the end of my full day. So like 6, 7 o'clock, I go and I take 5 minutes and I write down 3 to 4 things that I'm grateful for. Three to four things that happened that day that made me feel good for what I did and how I accomplished it. And then the last thing I do before I go to bed, other than update Instagram, is I ask myself, what is it do I want to accomplish tomorrow? And I write that down. Right. And that is a Monday through Friday practice. I don't do it on weekends because I have one thing I want to accomplish on weekends, and that's be an awesome dad and husband, and I don't need to journal for that. So
that's great. I mean, that is amazing. You know, mindset to me is the big differential between people that are, you know, just good, great, or outstanding. You know, and I talk about it in both of my books, either in Your Restaurant Sucks and Your Restaurant Still Sucks. Mindset is a huge thing. And you know, if I just came out and said this was a book about mindset, no one would buy it, right? So I have to hide it in there, little strategic spots, and give people like little I call them little gold nuggets that I'm just leaving about, you know, your mindset really, really impacts the way your restaurant performs.
Yeah, so everybody listening, I have a hack, right? Here's a way to change your mindset. It's really simple. When you talk about your future and the things you want to accomplish, don't talk about them as future. Talk about them as present.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. Good.
So let's say you want to get your sales up to $1 million a year. I'm just making up a number here. Right. You know, let's say you're currently at 600 and you want to get to a million. Don't say it as when I get to a million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Say it as now I'm so happy and grateful now that I've achieved $1 million annual in sales. And with that, I do X and Y.
Mm-hmm.
If you tell your mind you already have the thing, yep. Your mind will subconsciously figure out how to get the thing.
Exactly. Yeah. No, your mind is actually a servo mechanism. It seeks what you want. And if you say that's what I have and I'm happy and I'm grateful for it, it will find a way to make it true for you. It's amazing. The mind is so powerful.
Yeah. Take a picture of the white Mustang convertible you want, put it in your journal, look at it every day.
Yeah, do that, you know, or like, you know, like this weekend, I'm going to go test drive a Tesla. So
that's fun. Here's another one I do. I don't know if you can see this on screen, but I on my phone, I have a mm-hmm. picture of my bank account. Right? Can you see the number on it? What does it say?
Yeah, 1 million, over a million.
Yeah, I don't have $1 million in my bank account.
But you put it there because yeah.
Currently, but I've actually made a physical representation of what $1 million looks like in my account. And every time I pick up my phone, the first thing I see is my account with $1 million in it.
Yeah. So when I'm at the gym, I would be doing like, I do this exercise. It's a abdominal exercise. It's like a twisting for your obliques. And every time I'm twisting, I close my eyes and I visualize like my online sales, just roll the number rolling. So every time I do a rep, it's like, instead of like 1, 2, it's like 1,000, 2,000. And I always go up to like 100. So I'm like, I see the dial changing and I see like 100,000 every month. You know, and that's how I visualize is I just every time I'm doing a rep, I'm seeing like I'm seeing the dollar, just the $1,000 every time I do a rep. So
that's awesome. You that might give me motivation to work out more.
There you go. Time you're putting that burger up to your mouth, $5,000.
That's not exercise. That takes work.
That's exercise. It's a curl. It's kind of a curl. You know. Yeah. I always say be mindful when you're eating. That's all. Just be mindful. Mindful eating is the best. So talking about food, what's the best meal you've ever had?
Oh God. The day that I can answer that question, shoot me, cause it's over. I have had so many great meals that it's hard to pick one. I can tell you a story of one of my favorite restaurant experiences.
Okay. That'd be great. Yeah.
So the wife and I went on vacation to Italy and we're in Florence. And I'd heard about this restaurant called Il Latini and everybody should go look it up. It's like the hardest to find restaurant ever. It's down an alley, down another alley, down like another alley, right? Mm-hmm. And they're so busy that basically you have to wait outside till you can get in. And they have these like, it's like a bar outside, just like in the cement. Like, and every half hour they bring out like wine and cheese to like keep you happy while you're waiting outside, which is great customer experience, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't pay for that. It's just part of it. You get brought in and it's cavernous. There's like room after room after room and they're dome shaped. Like it's a really old building and hanging everywhere in the ceiling is like cured legs of pork, right? Prosciutto, but and so my wife and I sit down and we'd heard the great things about this place and we're super excited. We sit down and the server comes over and he looks at my wife, he goes, "Madame, how about a pork shank and a nice orange demi-glaze, blah, blah, blah." Like it describes the dish. My wife goes, "Yes." He goes, "Also to share, farfalla, very light. Tomato sauce. Tomatoes are grown 16 miles or 16 kilometers outside of a little basil on top. Very simple." And my wife goes, "Yes." And he looks at me and he goes, "Signore, Fortina, extra thick, medium rare, nice and juicy. I bring for you. You like?" And I was like, "Yes." Right. And he comes over and he drops a bottle of red wine on the table. And he goes, "This is my family's vineyard. It's an honor system here, Il Latini. You drink whatever you like. You tell me later. We take care of it." Right. I realize what's happened. He read us.
Oh,
there was no menu. He came over and sized us up and guessed what we were going to order. And whether he was right or not, like he nailed it, right?
Yeah.
We never saw a menu. We're drinking the wine. The wine is excellent. One of the best steaks I've ever eaten. That pork shank was delicious. The farfalla was amazing, right? Like the whole experience. Oh, I forgot. We also, he's like, "Oh, you want some prosciutto?" I was like, "Yeah." Reaches up, pulls it off the ceiling, shaves it right on your plate, puts it back up on the hook. Like,
oh, wow.
We walked out of there that night and my wife was like, "Can you take a picture of me hugging the restaurant?" Il Latini in Florence. Unbelievable.
Latini in Florence.
Yeah. When and if we can ever fly again.
Yeah, really. Yeah. It'll be soon. I'm having faith. I'm putting that positive frame of mind that we're going to be back to flying pretty soon.
God bless. We're all going to Il Latini.
That sounds great to me. We should do it. We should do a big culinary tour.
Oh, I call those culinary safaris.
That sounds awesome. We should plan one.
Yeah, we've been doing them. Me and a couple of other local influencers have been doing them every Friday in the summer. So
really, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll literally go. Last week we did 4 restaurants in a row, but the prior week we did 9 restaurants in 10 hours.
Wow, restaurant safari. I like that idea.
So the idea is you go and you have like 1 or 2 items. You eat it. You get up. You go to the next one. You have 1 or 2 items. You get up. You go. It's a
probably a pub crawl, but with food.
Yeah, you definitely have to do a lot of exercising the next day.
Yeah, that would like wipe me out. But you know, that's how I like to eat. I mean, I like to go to restaurants and I order like a couple small plates. You know, try it out, and then I like to go to another place and try a couple things out. Like when I go to a city to speak, when I could go to a city and speak, you know, that's why I like to eat. Like because you know, every time I go to some big city, everyone gives me, "Oh, you gotta go here," and they give me like 8-9 places to check out, and I'm like, all right, I can't go and have a meal at each place. So I'll go and like, I'll have like 1 or 2 appetizers and I'll go to the next place. And I'll try to get as many as I can. And I usually can hit 4 or 5 in a night without, I'm like, before, after that, I'm like, I'm tapping out. I'm out. I'm going back to the hotel. I gotta.
Yeah, I do that. That's how I travel as well. I call them eat-cations.
Yeah, they're awesome. I love it. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and, you know, to me, I think, you know, mentorship is really cool and really big also. Who are some maybe your mentors you've had in your life?
Oh, and
not about restaurants either. Just mentors in your life that just made you a better man, better person.
Well, I mean, look, you were on our podcast, on the Restaurant Executive Mastery Podcast. My co-host, John Shaw, he's an inspirational thought leader and career coach. I pay him, right? He's my coach. But he has made a world of difference in my life. And how I got to him is what I actually want to talk about here. Prior to John, there was always somebody in my life who was an inspirational leader. Mm-hmm. Jeff Roars, who was the CMO when I worked at Yext, he's a genius. He was at Exact Target. Working under him for 2 years, I had unbelievable amounts of inspiration from Jeff Roars, right? And mm-hmm. Jay Baer, I think, is also incredible. But I'd always had somebody in my life that was an inspiration. Mm-hmm. After I left Yext, I didn't have an inspirational leader. There wasn't somebody who had been down my path or who had done what I wanted to do or had a model for what I wanted to accomplish. And I was failing, Donald. I was running marketing for a $44 million publicly traded company. And every day at the end of the day going, I have no idea what I did today. And I have no idea what I'm doing tomorrow. I was frantic. Okay. And I realized what I needed was an inspirational leader in my life because I've always had one to that point. I ended up, long story short, I found John and it changed everything. But I believe in, you know, whether you want to look at it from a mastermind model or a one-to-one model, but having somebody that you can ask questions to that knows the answer or has seen the movie, even if they pay for it, is invaluable, man. And you can get that from books. You can get that from podcasts. You can get that from a one-on-one coach. But I believe that you need somebody who can help you define your own path, even if it's just evocative.
It's true.
Yeah, I still have. So I got into coaching in 2008 when the market crashed, you know, the economy crashed in 2008. I hired a business coach to help me kind of remodel. I was just doing consulting exclusively back then. And, you know, all my consulting clients dried up. So I actually hired a business coach to help me kind of do a kind of rework my business model. And, you know, he took me through this coaching process. I was like, I really love this coaching stuff. And then I actually Googled restaurant coaches. Back in 2008, no one was saying they were a restaurant coach back then. So that's why I got the name The Restaurant Coach. And so I asked him, you know, do you do certification? He said, yeah. So I got certified as a coach, an executive coach. And then I just, him and I rebuilt my whole brand around this coaching kind of model. And ever since 2009, I've been the restaurant coach. And I still have the same business coach to this day.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Same guy. 11 years, man. He's been there. And I tell you, every time I talk to him, I learn something new. You know, he challenges me. He pushes me. And I always say I'm a better man and a better person, a better human being because of his kind of his coaching and guidance. So
that's awesome. I'm going to directly answer your question now. Okay. So John Mark Shaw is my current inspiration. Okay. Jeff Roars was a crazy leader in my life. I happen to love Guy Kawasaki, right?
Oh, yeah.
If people do not know who Guy Kawasaki is, either go listen to his podcast, which is incredible, or read one of his books. He was one of the original people at Apple. Much like you, he's a tell it like it is kind of guy. He's very, very funny. But like if Guy Kawasaki is speaking at a convention, Guy Kawasaki puts out a book or Guy Kawasaki puts out a podcast, I listen to it. That guy has an unbelievable way of making really smart things really digestible.
Yeah,
and I aspire to be that person.
Yeah. And one of the people I really admire is Simon Sinek. I love his stuff. I love his kind of straightforward too. Yeah. Yeah. Having mentors is great. And you might not really think you have a mentor, but you probably do. You have probably a couple people.
Yeah. I mean, my dad at one point was, you know, you can get inspiration from a lot of people, but I believe in calling people like that into your life.
Yeah, exactly. What do you kind of see as the new normal for restaurants?
Digital marketing. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that this concept of like, I open the door, my food is great, was a failing concept and it's going to fail faster. So, you know, I think if you want to be a successful restaurant, first of all, you have the mindset, right? You got the right people. That's why they call you, right? And you got to have the right model. But after that, like if you're not thinking about, how to raise awareness, acquire, and retain customers, you're going to fail. And I think the new normal, so to speak, has to have some sort of seamless, frictionless customer journey that is easier to use than seamless, right? That is easier to use than Uber Eats. If you make it easy and compelling for a consumer to do business with your restaurant, the same way that DoorDash does, you will win. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think that that is a technology enabled business.
I'm going to go out and tell everyone right now, if you need help getting your technology up to speed and getting to the modern world, contact Rev. He's the man. You want help with your culture, your mindset, your team, stuff like that, I'll help you. But when you get to that point where you need help with, I need to get, kind of escalate my digital game, you want to call Rev. That's the guy I recommend.
Thank you. We should just form like the Justice League. Like
we should. Oh, that's it. That's it. The Restaurant League.
Yeah, I realized that. I tell you this, I owned a bar for 6 years, mm-hmm. and we were horrible operators, horrible. But you know what? There's like, that's easy to fix. It's actually the acquisition and awareness and retention that's really hard. And I realized that that was the part we were actually good at. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, I'm going to go do that because I think it's fun as hell, man. Like, I'll never forget. I was sitting around one day and I was angry. We were getting negative Yelp reviews. And I was like, why are we a 3.5? We're the number one checked in bar for whiskey on Foursquare. We get glowing reviews from Thrillist and Time Out. And, I got rock musicians who sell at stadiums who only come to this bar. Mm. Like on TV, we had 1,500 Facebook followers before we opened our doors. Wow. We had hundreds of followers. Like, why? Like, why are we so bad? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why? Because we don't show Yelp the respect it deserves. And so I literally started having my servers or my bartenders at the end of a transaction go, did you have a 5-star experience? And if they said yes, right, we would say, cool. If you want to share your thoughts, we love Yelp, right? And if they said no, they're like, cool, what can I do right now to make it a 5-star experience? And they would say, I thought my appetizer was cold, or, whatever. And we would make up. We went from a 3.5 to a 4.0 in a matter of months.
Oh, wow. Right? That's amazing, too.
Super fast.
Yelp is brutal.
And we would take really positive reviews because there's a share link, right? On a Yelp review, and we'd put them on our social media. Thanks, Jane. We super appreciate you too, and glad you like the whiskey, right? Mm-hmm. We prioritized asking for those things. Like when we actually used Yelp the way it's supposed to be used, mm-hmm. our reviews skyrocketed, and you could see people walking into our business that had never been there before. And mm-hmm. anecdotally, we would have somebody say, oh, I found you on Yelp. And when I went and confirmed it with analytics, like I'd look at our website and our number three source of traffic was Yelp. I was like, this works, right? I realized I was good at that piece and I was bad at operations. So
it was what you're good at, right? So what advice would you give your younger self? Because you've done a lot of stuff in your life.
Oh man. I don't live with regrets and I don't live in the past. No. Mostly because it's a time in my life there's nothing I can do about.
Yeah, no.
If there were two things that I think I might be interested in giving myself advice on, one would be I would go back to high school and tell high school year old me that this guy Gary that was in my English class who only wore Iron Maiden shirts was way cooler than I thought he was at the time. But that was pretty hard on Gary, and now Iron Maiden's one of my favorite bands, so I would go do that. And the other thing is I would have probably told myself to start writing a book a while ago.
Yeah.
Right? Those would probably be the two things. Other than that, I'm pretty happy with where I am and what I've done. And I hope that the experiences that I have and the inspiration I can bring to the table are helpful to other people,
Exactly. Perfect.
And Gary Martell, if you're listening, Iron Maiden rock.
Yeah. Dude, Gary, sorry, dude. Gary. Sorry, Gary. Meet up, I'll buy you whiskey.
Whatever he's into.
So how should restaurants shift their menus right now?
It's interesting. You talk about a restaurant menu shift. Whatever your community needs, right? Like somebody might say family meals are a good idea. Is that what your community needs? And if they are, then yeah, that's a great idea. I was talking to Bruce earlier today, and he's like, oh, we have this bakery near us where they basically tell you how to bake all the things, and you can get a bakery kit and make their cakes and cookies like they are new. I was like, cool, I don't want that. But people in that community think that's awesome and that's a great way to deliver the in-store experience in the bag, right? Mm-hmm. Do that. But yeah, I think you have to experiment a little and find out, what your customer is like. And you know what's a really great way to find out what your customer is like?
Your peers. ask them and look at your POS system. It tells you what they're buying.
Look at your data and then send out a survey.
Yeah, ask. And nothing wrong with asking. I think one of the things that holds a lot of restaurants back is that they think they know better. They think they know better than the guest. I'm going to tell you right now, you don't. You don't. Just ask. Ask people. And then look at your POS system. Your POS tells you exactly where people are spending their money.
Yeah, I have a friend who owns a really fancy steak restaurant in North Jersey. He's doing $1,000 a day in delivery orders of T-bones. You know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to order a T-bone because I'm not paying $100 to bring you a steak. But he found his community wanted it. So
it's his niche, man.
God bless.
You know what give I mean? People what they want.
Give them what they want.
Give people what they want. Not what you think they want.
You know, now look, this is probably advice you would give, but I would tell people to pare down their menu, right?
Well, yeah.
This is a good time to reduce the fluff. This is a good time to remove the dogs, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a good time to test what happens. Another menu pivot I would suggest for people is if you're using third-party delivery services, and I'm an advocate for them if you have a system in place to convert them to first party. Otherwise, right. I'm not an advocate. A couple of my clients are doing this. They have actually removed some of their items from third party and only made them available first party. Ooh. So the pizzeria as an example, because it's easy. They'll leave the cheese, they'll leave the pepperoni. But if they have like a really cool chicken franchise pie or like a really interesting penne alla vodka pie, no, that's only available from the restaurant directly, right? I think that's an interesting menu pivot, is only putting the things that are really, really popular on the other one. And the other pivot I would suggest people look at from a delivery lens is if it delivers poorly, should you be delivering it, right?
That's the truth, yeah. Yeah, and that's the first thing you should look at. If you can't deliver it, you know, it's just, you know, like you said, how do I put that experience in a bag? If I can't deliver it and have the same experience and it's going to get to the place and be just disgusting, then don't do it on delivery. Yeah.
My wife is like, I don't understand you. You love hot wings. I was like, I do. How can we never order them delivery? I was like, because everybody sends them rubbery.
Yeah, they're all nasty. Yeah. So what's your favorite social media platform?
I'd be remiss if I didn't say Instagram. You know, between my five accounts, I have 650,000 followers. So if I didn't answer Instagram, I'd be making a lot of people angry. But I really love Instagram.
Any social media platforms up and coming you're kind of looking at or playing around on?
You know, people are kind of hot on the TikTok. I'm not. And I'll tell you why. If you're a restaurant operator, we primarily speak to independent restaurant operators. You know, we're not talking to executives at McDonald's all day. But like, marketing is hard. Marketing takes a lot of time. Content creation, it's not, you know, it's not rocket science, but you got to figure it out. There's an art to it.
You got to put in some consistency behind it.
Yeah, TikTok. I think the level of creation is a little harder, right? Mm-hmm. And there's very little trackable ROI. There's no link in bio. You know, you can't get people to sign up for your email address. Like, it really is just broadcasting a message. And while I'm a fan of that, if the content is good, I think it's hard to measure the effectiveness of TikTok on your business. And so I wouldn't recommend it for a business unless they know how to leverage it. That is why I like Instagram and Facebook.
Very cool. Now, I'm gonna kind of sideway here. One of your posts on Instagram that I want to kind of dive into, you mentioned you know, how can people use hashtags to grow their following? And then how many hashtags should they use?
So I love this question because it's easy to answer. Instagram allows you up to 30 hashtags. Use them all.
Yes.
There's no reason to not use all of them, right? You will not be penalized if you use all 30 or if you use one. You'll only really be penalized if you use none, right? So how many to use is 30. The other question is how to use them to grow your account. So, you know, the algorithm is a beast, right? I mean, I have 100,000 followers and lately I've been getting 700 likes. Man, that is small. but here's the thing. Hashtags work, okay? Mm-hmm. And they may not get you a ton of growth and they may not boost you on a per post basis, right? But if somebody happens to go to a hashtag looking for something like, you know, NYC pizza, I used the other day. Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody actually wants to click on that hashtag and look for NYC pizza, you want to be there, right? And so using hashtags gets you in the stream of people who are searching, right? It may not get you a lot of engagement on your per post, which is obviously what you like because you want to grow your account. But for somebody who's using hashtags to discover, you want to make sure your content there. It's similar to SEO, right? If I search best pizza near me and you don't come up and you own a pizza shop, what'd you do wrong? Hashtags, the same thing. If there's a pizza, if there's a hashtag that's relevant to your community or your business, then you should use it. And where people go wrong, where restaurant operators go really wrong, is, and we're picking on pizza shops today, but
nothing against pizza places.
Yeah, using the hashtag pizza is a bad idea. You know why? Millions of people use it a minute. The chance of you being discovered on hashtag pizza is infinitesimal, right? But if there's hashtag best in your town's name, like, and I live in Rutherford, New Jersey. If there's best in Rutherford, that's a relevant hashtag. Or if you're in Jersey City, they use JC Make It Yours. Find those local hashtags that are relevant for a restaurant owner. Those are the ones to jump on. Those are really ones to jump on because they're going to help connect you within a mile radius of your store.
Definitely use a local hashtag, whatever city you're in. Make sure you're using something local. And make a unique one, too. A couple unique ones, like Rev mentioned.
Yeah, and the last one I would mention is a branded hashtag, right? Your restaurant or your business should have its own hashtag. And it could be just your name, right? It could be, again, I'm picking on Ferrazzoli's here, but Ferrazzoli's Kitchen, like that's their hashtag. Mm-hmm. And it might only have a couple hundred uses, but it doesn't matter. Those are high value uses. Mm-hmm. You should determine what your brand hashtag is and you should put it in your bio. That way you're giving a signal to your followers to use your hashtag and to populate it. So when somebody else who's not had a transaction with that business ends up on that hashtag and all they see is beautiful pictures of food or people having a great time, it just confirms the purchase, right? It completes the customer journey.
Now, when you're putting hashtags in, do you tell people to put hashtags in the when they make the post or put it in as a comment?
Right. The question is captions or comments, right?
Captions or comment, yeah.
So Instagram doesn't care. It doesn't matter.
Okay. I hear a lot of people say, "Oh, don't put it in the caption. Put it in the comment."
It's been debunked. So here's what I do. Okay, I put three or four in the caption, in the caption,
right? Okay?
And then I put the rest in the first comment. Now, why do I do that? I aesthetically think that looks better. Okay. I just, rather than seeing a cloud of hashtags in the post, you don't see it. So number one, I think it's aesthetically pleasing, right? Number two, I use branded hashtags. Rev's Marketing Tips, that's my hashtag. Burgerati, that's my hashtag. So in the caption, I will put the hashtag I want you to see and I want you to use. So that if you see my post and at the bottom, the only hashtag you see is Rev's Marketing Tips. Mm-hmm. If you tap on that, you see all the other content that I put out there. So that's why I do it. The other one, now this is a hack that Jen Herman taught me, is the way the Explore tab works is it works on activity. So if you use a hashtag like hashtag pizza, the only chance you have of getting juice on that is the quickest possible way. So if you're going to put some in the caption and some in the comments, when you put it in the caption, it goes live quicker. So for that 1 or 2 or 3 seconds, you have a chance to jump on that big hashtag. So you put the big performing hashtags in the caption,
and then put your other ones in the comment.
Comments.
Oh, very cool, very cool. And you know, a lot of people don't know that on Instagram, you can follow just hashtags.
Yep.
Yeah. So I have like a few key hashtags I follow all the time. You know.
Yeah, you should follow ones relevant to your industry, and you should follow your own hashtag. Because that's also a way to find out users that are using your branded hashtag that maybe didn't tag you in a photo or didn't geolocate you, but they use your hashtag. Killer. You want to see that.
And how do people drive engagement on Instagram?
Oh, man. That's a whole – how much time do we have?
That's a long time. Give them one hack, one short one that they could use today.
Reply to your DMs, right? Check your DMs, reply to your DMs. That's people that want something from you, right? And another one is, I would say, if you're a restaurant operator and you're following some of your customers, go like and comment on their content.
Exactly.
And I'm going to give you one. We'll do three. The last one. If a consumer or a customer shares content about your restaurant, forward it. Just put it in your stories, right? go look at East Village Pizza. Frank's a master. If somebody posts content and tags East Village Pizza, he instantly shares it to his stories, and it gets him insane amounts of engagement, and is really a way of thanking the customer.
Awesome. Yeah. Frank is awesome. He's one of the ones I always recommend people follow. Yeah, that guy just does it right. Yeah.
Frank's the ball. I love Frank.
He's a badass. So, you know, to me, I always, you know, I'm a big believer in culture, and culture is very influential in restaurant success. What would you say is the key to creating culture?
Oh man. I would say have a purpose, right? Mm-hmm. What is the purpose? And I love speaking through examples. Farazzoli's Italian Kitchen. Boy, I'm going to have to ping back to this. There are 4 pizza places in our tiny little town here, okay? Mm-hmm. It is a tiny town. It's 3 square miles, okay? There are 4 That's places. And it's tiny. There are 4 places where you can get pizza, and one of them is Domino's, right? Mm-hmm. And Matt from Farazzoli's, literally, he's across the street from one and next door to Domino's, right? Oh, wow. Like, could you dial in competition even worse, okay? But Matt did something interesting. What is his purpose? So this town, we're the next town over from where the Giants and the Jets play. So mm-hmm. you can imagine this is a big football town, right? And in our high school in town, the Bulldogs, people are very passionate about high school football here.
Yeah.
So he was like, you know what? We're going to be the high school football pizza place. Ooh. And he hires people that work for the team. He works for players. He hires the cheerleaders. He hires them. And his decoration is about the Bulldogs. And whenever they need support, they're doing a fundraiser, whatever, he's there with his pizza, right? And he has a very flexible hiring schedule. If you're a high school student and you work for Matt and you get a hot date on a Friday and you want to call out, it's cool. Here's the list of other employees. See who will take your shift, right?
Yeah.
So the point is, he has a purpose. He has figured out how to serve his community. Mm. Now, you don't go there and it's not called Bulldog Pizza or, you know, Rutherford football team pizza.
Right.
Farazzoli's, but he found a purpose, and he's got the rest of his staff to care about that purpose, right? They care about the high school, they care about the community, they care about doing good, and they care about making good food. And so you go there, and is it the best pizza ever? Don't tell Matt I said this, it's not, but it is the best pizza experience, right? And that outshines food quality every single time. And please, Farazzoli's, it makes wonderful food. That is not what I'm saying. But I choose to go there because he has given a purpose to the business, and he has taught that to his employees. And when I interact with his employees, I feel that they feel the intentions and the purpose of serving their community.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I owe Matt an apology.
You might have to go buy some pizza tonight from
him. We'll order some today.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Their
grandma vodka pie is bananas good. So,
look into the future. How long do you see this kind of, how long do you see the restaurant world kind of recovering from this pandemic?
So I don't like to think of it in terms of recovery. I look at it as a term of a reset, right? How long is the reset going to take? Okay. Well, I would tell a restaurant operator, that's up to you. Okay. I have a client who has 4 locations. They've seen a 200% lift in business.
Yep.
Okay.
I have clients like just killing it right now.
We figured out how to do 1 day a month, 13 to 18% 1 day lift in business.
Wow. Right.
Like literally, it's like pressing a magic button. We will have a meeting in July about what's the day in August. We'll have a meeting in August about what's the day in September. And it takes $300 and a couple of focus days of promotion. Like, all of this just reset and figured out. The timeline is up to you, right? And if I understand, it might be harder if you're La Bernardin, if you're like some super high end place that, like, okay, that challenge is a little bigger, right? Than a pizza place that needs some iteration, but the timeline's up to you.
Very cool. No, that's the truth. I like to look at that again. I think words are very powerful. And then, you know, the word reset is so much better, I think. A lot better, a lot better. So how do you deal with stress when you get stressed out?
I drink beer by myself 6 nights a week. that is actually true. I allow myself 2 beers every night. It calms me down. Also, I'll tell you what I do throughout the day. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm into fidget spinners.
Really?
Yeah, I've been spinning this whole conversation.
Have you really?
I don't have one. I don't have 2. I don't have three. I don't have four. I don't have five. And there are two more upstairs. I spin all day, okay? And each one of my spinners aligns to a different level of thinking. So when I need to be strategic, Iron Man spinner comes out, okay? When I need to think like a leader, Captain America comes out. When I need to remember to be friendly, Spider-Man comes out. When I need to really power through getting something done, the Hulk comes out. And when I need to be benevolent and grateful, the benevolent Fox comes out, okay? And I spin all day. It keeps me focused. It keeps me stressed. If I have a moment that I just blank out, mm-hmm. I'll stop for a minute. I'll take a couple deep breaths. I'll spin. And it just focuses my energy. But so beer and spinners.
It's funny you mentioned spinners because, you know.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, I got one too. Yeah. Yep.
They're great. They're great for transition. If you have like a really busy day and you literally have to like change hats between mm-hmm. a meeting. If you assign your spinners to, and you don't have to use spinners, this is what I use. Like,
I need to know where you got that Captain America one. I like that Captain America one.
Oh, I bought them as a set. I got all three of them. I have Thor's hammer and just the top of the hammer spins.
Does it really?
Yeah, it's badass.
All right.
But so the spinner.
Give me a link for that.
Focused, the journaling helps me relieve some stress. I do drink craft beer by myself. And every once in a while, when I'm really like bananas, I would just go play a song I really like.
Oh, really? Wow. Do you play any instruments?
Horribly. Horribly. That's why when I was in the music business, I was a manager, not a musician.
Yeah. For stress, I have to work out. And I always kind of make the joke. I tell people, I work out for your benefit, not mine, because you don't want to be around me if I don't work out. Trust me. You do not want to be around me.
Yeah, my catharsis is helping people. If I did something good to help somebody that day, that actually alleviates a lot of stress.
Yeah. So name one book, an audiobook, or a podcast. And in fact, you know, of course, mention your podcast that you have.
Restaurant Executive Mastery. So we talk to C-suite leaders and founders of multi-unit restaurant brands about mindset and visioning. It's not intended for everybody. It's intended for a very small audience, but the people that your episode was incredible. If you want to think about mindset and growth and visionary leadership in the restaurant business, that's who it's intended for.
Definitely. Yeah. Check it out. How about a book? What book or audiobook would you recommend?
The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Waddle.
That's an awesome book, actually.
I think it was written in 1916.
Yeah, that was an old book. Yeah.
Weekly is the timing at which I listen to part of that book. I like the audio version, mm-hmm. but I listen or interact with that book on a weekly basis.
Do you really? Every week?
Yeah. There's a secret, and I'm going to tell you, you're not supposed to know the secret until you've read the book, but I'll tell you since we're on a call.
Right.
But you're supposed to read the book, mm-hmm. and then you're supposed to go back and read chapters 4, 7, 11, and 13 every day for 90 days.
Okay.
Okay. And it's supposed to retrain your mind. I actually
4, 7, 11, and 19.
4, 7, 11, and 13.
4, 7, 11, 13.
I actually went and created an MP3 of just those in the audiobook. So I'll
listen to them.
Yeah. So I'll just listen once a week. I'll listen to it. But the science.
I'm going to do that. I wrote it down. So I'm going to do it. I'm going to implement it. You know, I have a similar book, you know, Think and Grow Rich.
Oh, amazing.
I look at every week and I read something out of it every week. So.
Amazing.
I'm always do the affirmation. There's an affirmation he has in there. I always do my affirmation in the morning.
I bought that book on tour with a band called Thursday when we headlined a stadium in the jungle in Manila. Wow. I'll never forget the day I bought that book.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's probably a whole story right there.
It was crazy. The security guards for that show were military personnel. So standing at the edge of the stage were dudes in full gear with rifles and like bayonets and like, you know, they're like an emo punk band from Jersey, like playing songs about like hating your teenage life. I'm mocking them a little bit. They're very intelligent guys, but it was crazy to have like basically the military standing at the edge of the stage. But I bought that book the next day and I'll never forget it.
Damn, that's amazing. So give us one quote you live by.
Be awesome at two things and outsource everything else.
There you go. That's a good one.
Figure out what you're good at. Figure out something else you're good at. And all the other things have somebody else do or learn from them.
Yeah. That's a great one. And then how can people contact you?
Whatever platform you like the best, I monitor it, right? So Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, whatever you want. But I'm most active on LinkedIn and Instagram, and the screen name is the same on everyone, at Rev Ciancio. For people who are listening to this and going, I don't know how to spell that, the easiest way to find me is I have an Instagram account called Fun with Fries. It has 370,000 followers and is just pictures of French fries. And my at Rev Ciancio is in the bio.
There you go. Well, awesome. You know, Rev, I want to say thank you so much for taking time to be on the show today. And thanks for sharing your insights. Like I tell everybody, if you need help getting your digital kind of marketing up to speed, you want to really learn how to engage and turn, you know, just regulars into loyal, loyal fans, get a hold of Rev. He'll help you.
Thank you. I want to have better restaurant experiences. So I started a business where I can help restaurateurs to create the experience that I want to have.
Exactly.
So egotistical.
Yeah.
Thanks, though. I think you're a genius and a true leader in the space. Oh, and I'm grateful to speak to you and your father. Oh,
thank you. I appreciate you so much, my friend. And you make it a fantastic day. Be safe and be healthy.
Get a great tasty day. All
right. Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Coach Podcast with Donald Burns. Tune in next time as we serve up more ways to maximize your potential. Visit our website at www.therestaurantcoach.com or download episodes at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify.